You're listening to Naked Oceans with Sarah Castor-Perry and me, Helen Scales. Now, you may remember, last year we went along to the Census of Marine Life conference and we chatted to Jesse Ossabell, the main man behind the census, who came up with the idea of tracking down as much marine life as possible. Well, as well as all the science involved, he told us about some of the creative inspirations that emerged from the project.
And artists donated pennants and made sculptures and paintings and all this stuff just kind of happened. And I think it's because marine life is beautiful. I think beauty was the attractor.
And we absolutely agree with Jesse. And this month, Naked Oceans is all about the beauty of the oceans and the many way artists are helping to shake off the public perception of the dark, scary, monster-filled depths. Because one of the biggest problems when it comes to caring for the ocean realm is that it's out of sight and out of mind. It's really hard to care about something we don't know about. And for most people, most of the time, we don't get a chance to see ocean life for ourselves. Well, the art of underwater photography is helping to bridge that gap between people and the oceans. Brian Skerry's pictures have appeared in National Geographic magazine since 1998, and he's spent more than 10,000 hours taking pictures underwater. When he ventures beneath the waves with his camera, Brian searches not only for the most captivating images of aquatic life, but he also looks for ways of portraying the many problems facing the ocean realm today.
I've been diving for a little over 30 years and making pictures in the ocean for most of that time. And throughout most of my career, I have seen essentially what I would call celebratory pictures of the ocean, you know, some wonderful pictures that show the majesty and beauty in the ocean. But very little had been done along the lines of the problems in the ocean. So my work has had this somewhat of an evolution, I guess, in my career, in the sense that I too want to make beautiful celebratory pictures. And in the early days, that's mostly what I did. But these days, I try to balance the happy pictures with some of the other side of the story kind of pictures, the pictures that show some of the problems. I'd like to think that my images and my stories are helping people to get a better grasp of these sometimes complex issues that occur in the ocean.
And you mentioned the complexity of the issues when it comes to problems in the oceans. There must be some things that are really difficult to actually find images to portray what's going on.
One of the first rather large stories that I proposed to National Geographic about issues in the ocean, it was a story that was published in 2007 about the global fish crisis, the problems of overfishing worldwide. And I had been researching and talking to the editors about this for the better part of 2 years. It was a difficult thing to sort of get your head around. It was something that we knew was happening. We had read a lot of scientific papers. There was a great paper that was published in the British journal Nature, you know, that had stated 90% of the big fish in the ocean have disappeared in the last 50 or 60 years. But to many, it was a difficult thing to photograph. How do we somehow translate photojournalistically these things that have disappeared? So ultimately, over a bit of time, came up with a four-tier plan. The first part of this story for me was about making pictures that would get readers to appreciate the animal. They may never warm up to a fish the way they do a polar bear or some fuzzy, cute mammal on land, but at least they could appreciate it. And I wanted them to see these animals in a wildlife way. The second step was to then show some of the horrific problems that are occurring, that the ways that fish are harvested and caught throughout the ocean, things like sharks and gill nets and bycatch from shrimp trawlers and long lines with illegal fish being caught and these kinds of things. Another step was to show how it's affecting humans. Places in West Africa that have lost their only source of protein because, yeah, first world nations have come in with factory trawlers and taken away all of their fish. And then the last step for the story to me was about hope. I mean, if it's all over, then what's the point? But, you know, showing at least some of the solutions, places where they're creating marine protected areas, you know, with less than a fraction of 1% of the world's oceans that have truly been protected from commercial fisheries, we need to do a better job of creating places where marine life can thrive. I think that, you know, my work helps to allow readers to digest this quickly and easily. They can see the photographs. You know, they might be sitting in a dentist's office or a doctor's office, and they pick up the magazine and they see a photo that engages them, and they want to read the caption and then hopefully read the story and learn a little bit more. So I'd like to think that those kinds of issues can be treated photographically in a way that makes people learn more and want to know even more.
Is there any way that you've been able to gauge or get a feeling for how your images and your work is maybe helping to even change people's behavior in terms of the decisions they're making about what they eat? Do you have any kind of way of tapping into that?
Yes. I mean, it's not anything that I can quantitatively say, yes, I can give you these facts and figures, but I get a sense from a couple of different things, and they're by no means scientific, but there's been some evidence that things have progressed. For example, after a story that I did on right whales a couple of years ago, I did a story on the most endangered species of large whale in the world, the North Atlantic right whale and the southern right whale, there had been legislation sort of languishing in Congress here in the U.S. to slow the speeds of shipping traffic coming into critical habitat for right whales, where moms and calves often live during certain parts of the year. And that legislation had never been passed. But after my story came out, according to the scientist who had been working on this for many years, the Congress did act and were able to pass this legislation. So I don't know if we can draw a direct result, but they seem to think it certainly helped. There was another example in the final days of the Bush administration here in the U.S. where they enacted some marine protection for a number of places in the Pacific, a place called Kingman Reef and some other places. And I had just published a story in National Geographic about Kingman Reef showing its magnificence and how relatively pristine it was compared to many other coral reefs because of its remote location. You know, it certainly isn't just because of those stories, and I could never claim that, nor would I want to, but I do think that the combination of great science along with those kinds of images can have an impact. The other thing is just, you know, talking to people and getting messages. I literally get dozens of messages every month and literally say, you know, I had no idea that for every pound of shrimp that I eat, there's 6 or 10 pounds of other animals that die in the process, you know, bycatch. They didn't know about that. And now they have changed their behavior. And I, you know, there's no way for me to measure that, but I'd certainly like to think that that's the approach, you know, that if we can work from the grassroots level up by educating and bringing awareness to people, and from the, you know, political, legislative level down, that we have a chance.
Absolutely. And it seems to me that the idea of spending my time taking pictures of beautiful underwater life just sounds perfect. What is the reality of being an underwater photographer?
Well, that is a big part of the reality, is that it is wonderful. But like any job, I suppose, there are upsides and downsides, and certainly the good outweigh the bad. You know, I mean, some days the weather is just terrible and you sit for weeks waiting for the weather to stop being windy or the visibility to clear up. Sometimes the animals don't show up. You go to do a story about tiger sharks and there's no tiger sharks there. Equipment sometimes breaks. You know, we're dealing with electronics that we take into salt water. And, you know, there's all these things that can go wrong. And as I often tell people, your success, I suppose, in anything in life, but certainly in this business, will be determined by how well you overcome problems. And I don't want to appear like this is, you know, a terrible job, because it's fantastic. I love what I do. I meet great researchers and boat drivers and dive guides and all these great people that I've learned so much from. And I get to make photographs, you know, I get to preserve an instant in the ocean. It's a moment in time, you know, you're trying to capture this blend of gesture and grace with an animal and light and motion all in a still frame. And sometimes it works. It all comes together and you get this truly magical moment that's preserved forever.
That was photojournalist Brian Skerry telling us a little bit about his work capturing the beauty and the problems of the oceans. And you can hear an extended version of that interview with Brian, including his thoughts on how the oceans have changed during his 3 decades of exploring, as well as some of the physical challenges that take place when you take a camera underwater. You can find all that at thenakedscientist.com/specials.